Good afternoon. It is Saturday, April 20th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 15:31 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green with you again today for today's study of the Crucible of Credible Creed. It is well known that all the popular chronologies for year one of Ramesses II do not align with the lunar calendar for the date in his year 52, which is given as an exact, in quotes, exact lunar day one, end quote, which is December 28th, 1264 BCE, in year 52 of Ramesses II. And that aligns exactly to the correct day in our chronology, which is also supported by the well-known statistician Peter Huber, who is an Egyptian chronologist also, who works on world chronology using analysis tools. Does Peter Huber. So we've quoted from his work in other parts of our study. So this date here, should we want to go and look at it? What's that? Oh yeah, that's a different article by somebody else. I'm looking for our homepage. Where's our homepage here? There it is. That's one. And that's a list of articles on our homepage. That's obtained by, how do you obtain that? I'm trying to think. How do you obtain that one? I'll have to figure that out so I can share that. But let's see, I mean, in our LEAP application on our homepage, if we were to enter this data in, okay, we put the minus sign in the year, then we backspace out the numbers and put in the year we want. 1264, which is the same number in our notation, whereas the scientific notation would call it minus 1263. Not that our notation is not scientific, just the conventional scientific notation subtracts 1 from the BCE value of the number for the year, because there's no zero year, right? Whereas we don't care about that in our calculator. We just do it number for number for simplicity. Now, December 12th, so let's enter the number 12 in the month. And then, well, we can just go to the next new moon. And we need to change to the plus from the minus and to the number 3 to get to Egyptian time zone. And then we go to the new moon, and it's December 28th at local time, 3:21 in the morning. And it's the date in the Egyptian calendar of Mekir 27, or second parrot 27, exactly what is recorded in the Egyptian records. Let's go back now to where I was looking. Now I'm trying to get there. That's it right there. Yeah. So it's Mekir 27, or 2 Parrot 27, December 28th, 1264 BCE. Exact lunar day 1 works perfectly. Only in our chronology of all the other popular chronologies. Ours is the only one that does this. That makes 1315 favored for that reason also, in addition to the other Hittite Amarna synchronisms. So today's study, and we have the table 4 of paragraph 10 that we've been studying, in of chapter 10, I should say, paragraph 3. Chapter 10, paragraph 3, or paragraph 10.3, there was this table 4 for the Babylonian and Assyrian kings, and in the commentary, the chronology of the Hittite kings was also given. and the date for Asher Dan the second or the first, Asher Dan the first, the 12:25 date for Asher Dan the first, we modified in the table to be 12:15, which just changed things very slightly, and that made everything fit better. So there were a few little changes that are mentioned, and we didn't want to do it, or I didn't want to do it completely in such a way as to hide the method. I wanted to show the methodology, so that's why it's not presented in a polished way. And now we're reading, and we found this wonderful eclipse, as we have been studying, May 18th, 1124 BCE, over Babylon, that's exactly the right time to align with our chronology for the king of Babylon, Marduk-Nadin-Ahi. We've talked about that. It's perfect. 1110 hours Babylon. That'll be local time. Or is that? Yeah, I think it is. Let's see. We have to correct for local time here. So if it says, 08 hours, 07, 08 hours, obviously that's not 08 hours. You've got to add 3 hours for Babylon. So it's correct. It's 1110 hours local time. So that's right. These are given in Greenwich Mean Time. So anyway, there's a lot you have to know to do all this research, and I'm trying to make it understandable for anyone. But that eclipse was the right time period to exactly agree with, and we know how rare solar eclipses are. If we just observed one, as we did in Canada and the U.S. recently, we know it won't be coming back to Canada for another, like, 40 years or something. You know, it takes a, so these eclipses, these solar eclipses, are very rare. And then, from the end of the reign of King Ereba Marduk, okay, yeah, I think that's all we needed to say about the previous paragraph. So we're in chapter 10, paragraph 8. Ereba Marduk, here named as identifiable as the general Arbaces, Ereba and Arba, very similar, right? Who rebelled from his master Sardanapalus, compared with Sar, meaning Tsar or whatever, king, and then Dan, Asher Dan, Sardan and Asher Dan, Sardanapalus, Asher Dan. And the palace is to do with all the Assyrian names that end with that, you know, Sardanapalus, or Ashurbanipal. The pal is always in there. We reckon backwards from that date, which is incredible. It's a phenomenal agreement. When we reckon the 1360 years of Diodorus Siculus for the length of the Assyrian Empire, because we rarely get anything working out when we add up these ancient numbers of these ancient historians. Here we add 781 plus 1360, and we arrive at, first of all, let's look at where the 781 came from in the table. Just checking that we're actually still recording. Okay, so, yeah, 781, see? That is the end of this kingdom. Nabu-shuma-ishkun. But he begins to rule then, but it's the end of the reign of Ereba Marduk, a.k.a. Arbaces. Ereba Marduk and Ereba and Arba correspond, and Ashurdan III, Sardan and Ashurdan, those correspond. So we've identified these people. No one else has done this, as far as I know. So, at least not with these dates, 809 for Arbaces and 817 for Dan. Ashurdan III, having observed an eclipse in the ninth year of his reign, which is 809, which is the ninth year after 817, right? Little ones, subtract 8 from 817. If you need help, ask someone for help, like your parents, for help about the arithmetic. So there it is, 809. So that eclipse of Ashurdan is perfect. In 809, with our chronology, everything works. Now we add to that 781, the end of the reign of Arbaces, add the 1360 years given by Diodorus Siculus. And there are many other different numbers given for these particular years. of the Assyrian kings. Not everyone says 1360, but Diodorus Siculus was the one who said 1360. When we add 781 plus 1360, 781 plus 1360 equals 2141 BCE. Assyria begins. And quite remarkably, that exactly coincides with the date that we have determined in other ways for the beginning of the Assyrian kingdom, specifically the time period. I'm trying to think now. Gudea, wasn't it? Was he the one? The official beginning. Well, it also agrees with somebody else, too. I'm trying to think if it's... Yeah, I think it's the date of Julius Africanus. He gives that exact date also, 2141. Very rarely do we get anyone agreeing with us, but we have mentioned it and documented it in all of our articles, this 2141. So let's do a search for that, 2141. If I do a search in the Google, I say site... It will give me an option to search for something on my website. In quotes, I then add after a space, so it's site, quote, willofjehovah.com, space, and then in quotes, we want to find 2141, right? Yeah. Then we search for that, so we find it. Where does it occur, right? Or how did we arrive at it first? We might have come up with it in the Ark of Urartu? I think we did. Whether this is the one or not, I'm not sure. Let's look for it. Here we go. Right. We date Chedorlaomer as 2141. Oh, yes, because... Yeah, 2146, Gudea was ruling, but he was a vassal, or he was a servant of the king at that time, a servant of Nimrod. And then we said he became independent in the year 2141 because he conquered Elam in the sixth year of his rule, and that would be the sixth year after 2146 is 2141. All of these things aligned with 2141 without any without any change by us. These are the actual numbers that we found for this King Gudea, whom we identified as Chedorlaomer. Everything worked without any effort, which is obviously a gift of some kind. It seemed anyway. I mean, I was in disbelief, just like anyone else would be. It's hard to believe that things can ever work. They never do. But I went through so many things that failed before I found this that, I didn't even expect to find it. I wasn't prepared to find it. I wasn't ready to find it. It just happened to be this way. And I didn't have to do any work to line it up. It was incredible. So that's all for today's study. It's amazing. Just amazing. It's so exciting. Ezra chapter 6. It was then that Darius the king put an order through, and they made an investigation in the house of the records of the treasures deposited there in Babylon. This is in the second year of Darius, as we mentioned, right? We know the fourth year of Darius in the ninth month, because it was the ninth month, it was still the year 518, even with Darius year 1 as 521. So, the fourth year of Darius, when they had been mourning for 70 years, is 70 years inclusive after 587, exactly correct. To 518 from 587, 70 years inclusive, a perfect alignment, proving it's not the 70 years of the servitude to the Gentiles necessarily, though it could be, but that 70 years is from 608 to 538, the year 1 of Cyrus, when he released the Jews from their captivity. So it's all wonderful, but there's 70 years written about in the book of Zechariah that talked about that, and that was from Zechariah chapter 7, verse 5. And at Ecbatana, in the fortified place that was in the jurisdictional district of Media, protect yourself against Mrs. in the information. There was found a scroll, and the memorandum to this effect was written within it. Quote, this is according to what Darius found. Quote, in the first year of Cyrus the king put an order through concerning the house of God in Jerusalem. Let the house be rebuilt as the place where they are to offer sacrifices, and its foundations are to be fixed, its height being 60 cubits, its width 60 cubits, with three layers of stones rolled into place, and one layer of timbers. And I need to double check something. Just need to see if we're actually studying the correct chapter here. Looks like it, yeah. It seems like we're actually, where they say rolled into place, seems to me we've already seen that rolled into place before. That's not a new thing. So that explains how they built it, too. They rolled the stones into place. People always wondered how, people talk about it quite often, how did the Egyptians get their large stones moved to build the pyramids? You know, this is a clue here, perhaps. And one layer of timbers, and let the expense be given from the king's house. And also let the gold and silver vessels of the house of God that Nebuchadnezzar took out of the temple that was in Jerusalem and brought to Babylon be returned, that they may reach the temple that is in Jerusalem at its place and be deposited in the house of God. Now, he goes on, this is a letter written by Darius. And this is now continuing that letter. Now Tatanai, the governor beyond the river, Shetharbozene, and their colleagues, the lesser governors, Tatanai and Shetharbozene, that are beyond the river, keep your distance from there. Let the work on that house of God alone. The governor of the Jews and the older men of the Jews will rebuild that house of God upon its place. And by me an order has been put through as to what you will do with these older men of the Jews for rebuilding that house of God. And from the royal treasury of the tax beyond the river, the expense will be promptly given to these able-bodied men without cessation. And what is needed, young bulls as well as rams and lambs for the burnt offerings to the God of heaven, wheat, salt, wine, and oil, just as the priests that are in Jerusalem say, let there be given them continually, day by day, without fail, that they may continually be presenting soothing offerings to the God of the heavens, soothing offerings, and praying for the life of the king and his sons. And by me an order has been put through that, as for anybody that violates this decree, a timber will be pulled out of his house, and he will be impaled upon it. And his house will be turned into a public privy. His house will be turned into a public privy on this account. And may the God who has caused his name to reside there overthrow any king and people that thrust his hand out to commit a violation and destroy that house of God, which is in Jerusalem. I, Darius, do put through an order. Let it be done promptly. So you see, that's the letter from Darius. That's the end of it. Then Tatanai, the governor beyond the river, Shetharbozene and their colleagues, just as Darius the king had sent word, so they did promptly. And the older men of the Jews were building and making progress under the prophesying of Haggai, we could say, actually, instead of Haggai, we could say Haggai. I just realized that could be the correct pronunciation. Under the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah the grandson of Iddo. And they built and finished it due to the order of the God of Israel and due to the order of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes, the king of Persia. And this is interesting because Artaxerxes later on had something to do with Ezra. As we will see in the next chapter of Ezra. And they completed this house by the third day of the lunar month Adar. That is, in the sixth year of the reign of Darius the king. Now, to be specific about the dating of that, the sixth year of Darius, Adar is in the springtime, it's the 11th month, so it would fall a full 6 years after year one in our calendar, because the year began in the spring, so the 11th month is in the next year. If it were the sixth year and the month were not the 11th, but say, you know, the ninth month, as we found before, that would still be in the same calendar year of the Julian calendar. We wouldn't have to add a year, but or go down one more year. But since it's the month Adar, we have to go down one more year, so it's not just 521 minus 5 for the sixth year. It's 521 minus 6, which is 515 BCE. In the springtime, say February or March of 515 BCE for year 6 of Darius. Given that we're taking his year 1 as 521, and that everyone knew when his official year 1 began, because they were all part of his kingdom, they were under his authority, whereas typically that's not the case, you know, with if it's different countries, of course, they're not under the same calendar system. And the sons of Israel, the priests and the Levites and the rest of the former exiles, held the inauguration of this house of God with joy. And when I say calendar system being different, both the Jews and the Medes and Persians and the Babylonians, by the way, I said yesterday something about the Medes conquering Cyrus, but Cyrus conquered the Medes, of course. Cyrus conquered the Medes, and from then on, it was the Medo-Persian Empire, and the Medes later became the ones governing, but it was all one combined empire of Medes and Persians at that point. But both the Medes and Persians, and the Babylonians for that part, for that matter, I mean, all of the kingdoms that we know of, began their year in the springtime, including the Israelites. So there was no difference in their calendars in that sense. They might have had different names for the months, which they indeed did, but it was all connected to the vernal equinox. The spring equinox, it was determined the start of the year, would be the month nearest to the lunar month nearest to the spring equinox, and that's how their calendar worked, and that's what we assume anyway. That's what we believe, and we assume that, and it's generally true, as far as we can tell. And they presented for the inauguration of this house. Now, this is in the lunar month Adar, when they completed the house, so it was more than 70 years now. It was something like, 515, but it wasn't yet 72 years. That would be in the summertime. So it was 71 years at this point after the destruction of the temple in 587 BCE, and they presented for the inauguration of this house of God 100 bulls, 200 rams, 400 lambs, and as a sin offering for all Israel, 12 male goats according to the number of the tribes of Israel. And they appointed the priests in their classes and the Levites in their divisions for the service of God, which is in Jerusalem, according to the prescription of the book of Moses. And I also want to add, we learn every day. There's more distinctions and more... To think that we can establish some system of thought and then just continue the same thought process and the same words, just repeat them monotonically or every single day, repeat the same ideas, is a nonsensical idea. We have to keep learning, and we do. We keep learning, and we keep learning because the Holy Spirit keeps revealing to us. So God's real slave is revealing new truth every day, not just the same. And the former exiles proceeded to hold the Passover on the 14th day of the first month, verse 19. As the priests and the Levites had cleansed themselves as one group, they were all of them clean, and so they slaughtered the Passover victim for all the former exiles and for their brothers the priests and for themselves. Then the sons of Israel that had returned from the exile... We know the exile was in 597, first of all, and then in 587 when Jerusalem was destroyed, and then in the 23rd year of Nebuchadnezzar, which is 22 years after 604, that would be 5, there was the 18th and then the 23rd year, so 582 BCE, there was another exile, as mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 52. But after all of them that returned from the exile, which included all of those exiles, the different times when the Babylonians had taken them into exile, they ate, and everyone that had separated himself to them from the uncleanness of the nations of the land. And to search for Jehovah, the God of Israel. What kind of sentence is that? Everyone that had returned from the exile ate. Sounds like they're eating in order to search for Jehovah. And they went on to hold... I never noticed that before. That meaning there is unusual. And they went on to hold the festival of unfermented cakes 7 days with rejoicing. But we keep learning, and tomorrow we'll have new insight again. For Jehovah caused them to rejoice, and he had turned the heart of the king of Assyria. You notice there, Darius is called the king of Assyria. He's not the king of Assyria. He was the king of Medo-Persia, but he's living in the place that we typically would think of as Babylon or Assyria in that part of the world. And Jehovah had turned the heart of the king of Assyria around toward them to strengthen their hands in the work of the house of the true God, the God of Israel. Jehovah is Yahweh. He's the God represented by the tetragrammaton, the four letters, the consonantal name of God, presented without vowels in the original or the most ancient texts which we have available to us. That was the book of Ezra chapter 6. We've now concluded. And Zechariah chapter 10 now. Zechariah chapter 10 is it's a continuation to... It continues what had been in quotations in the previous chapter, evidently, because there's no description here of who's speaking, but it's when we go back in chapter 9 to find out who was speaking, it's a pronouncement. It's part of this pronouncement that began in chapter 9, it appears. What does Clark say? He says, the promise of prosperity and plenty in the close of the preceding chapter leads the prophet to suggest next the means of obtaining them, supplication to Yahweh, and not to idols whose worship had already proved a fertile source of calamities. Make your requests. This is the book of Zechariah now, chapter 10, verse 1. Make your requests of Yahweh for rain in the time of the spring rain. There, look, the springtime is mentioned. Even as it was just mentioned with regard to the month Adar, in the book of Ezra, chapter 6. Even of Jehovah, Zechariah goes on, who is making the storm clouds, and who gives a downpour of rain to them, to each one vegetation in the field. For the teraphim themselves have spoken what is uncanny, and the practicers of divination for their part have visioned falsehood. And valueless dreams are what they keep speaking, and in vain they try to comfort. That is why they will certainly depart like a flock. They will become afflicted because there is no shepherd. Got about 4 minutes. Against the shepherds my anger has grown hot, continuing the quotation, and against the goat-like leaders I shall hold an accounting. Goat-like leaders, right? The ones about whom perhaps Jesus will say in the future, I never knew you. For Jehovah of armies has turned his attention to his drove, the house of Judah, and has made them like his horse of dignity in the battle. Out of him is the key man. Out of him is the supporting ruler. That is, out of Yahweh. Out of him is the battle bow. Out of him goes forth every taskmaster altogether. and they must become like mighty men stamping down in the mire of the streets in the battle. You notice the mire of the streets, because we've been talking about why they wouldn't go and move a large army during a time of rainfall, when there were rains. The rains would have to be scanty because they wouldn't want to be caught in the mire. It's okay to have, I mean, it's bad enough to have mire in the streets, but to have mire on the road when you're trying to get somewhere and you have to travel many miles, that just doesn't bode well for the battle, right? And they must get engaged in battle, for Yahweh is with them, and the riders of horses will have to experience shame. Right. Interesting. The connection with the mire of the streets is perhaps implied. And I will make the house of Judah superior, and the house of Joseph I shall save. We know Judah was favored as being the tribe from which Messiah would come, and indeed Jesus was from that house, and the house of Joseph was favored because his sons were both given shares among the 12 tribes of Israel. And I will give them a dwelling, for I will show them mercy, and they must become like those whom I had not cast off. For I am Yahweh their God, and I shall answer them. And those of Ephraim, one of the sons of Joseph, must become just like a mighty man. And their heart must rejoice as though from wine. In other words, they wouldn't be drinking wine. And their own sons will see and certainly rejoice. Their heart will be joyful in Yahweh. Verse 8, I will whistle for them and collect them together, for I shall certainly redeem them. Got 1 minute. And they must become many, just like those who have become many. And I shall scatter them like seed among the peoples, and in the distant places they will remember me. And they must revive with their sons and return. 1 minute. And I must bring them back from the land of Egypt, and from Assyria I shall collect them together. It even mentions Assyria again. We've been reading about Assyria in Ezra, even though he wasn't even the king of Assyria. It was Darius. And to the land of Gilead and Lebanon I shall bring them, and no room will be found for them. In other words, there will be a lot of them, it sounds like. And he must pass through the sea with distress, and in the sea he must strike down the waves, and all the depths of the Nile must dry up, and the pride of Assyria must be brought down, and the very scepter of Egypt will depart. And we know we've been talking about Egypt for some time. And I will make them superior in Jehovah, and in his name they will walk about, is the utterance of Jehovah, also known as Yahweh. That concludes our study for today. We were literally just out of time. Praise Jehovah. It's April 20th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 16:04 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And now in my behalf, this is Lib Dusty, and this is Cassie, and they're saying bye for now.